Today's broadcast, we're going to do a retro fit of a show from back in 2018 when we had Sergeant Tony Drzewicki with Leon County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Richard Jones with TFD, Sheriff A.J. Smith, Tim Linnefeld talking about a new coach in town. Yeah, all of that is coming up here right now.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
So here you are, my friend, on another occasion when you have an opportunity to sit in with the Moose and his guests talking about, in this particular show, a rebroadcast of a show in its entirety. We decided to do it because it all sort of fit the current climate having to do with law enforcement and concerns about things like police brutality and social injustice, especially racial profiling or institutionalized racism. A lot of buzzwords getting tossed around. And those of us who spend our time trying to sift through the parts and pieces and make sense of it all, who I think, like you, I hope you are this way, remain open-minded. You know, it's in short supply these days. Wherever you're going, try to bring your open-mindedness with you. And it's understandable. Everybody has their point of view on any given topic o'day. And when it comes to things like law and order, oh my gosh. Or if it comes down to something as volatile as the question of racism, especially institutionalized racism, individual attitudes being what they are, racist thinking is, I mean, in our terms, it's just disgusting, and it's just not where we're at. Now, historically, if you've got, well, ancient civilizations, or even go back 400 years, I mean, it was the rule of the day when... You know, when President Lincoln is pushing through to get the 13th Amendment passed, you know, you had members of the House then who were convinced, I mean, just believed that African Americans were not human. I mean, that was a doctrine. It was just the idea that these could not be human beings by any means. Now, you hear me say that, let me just tell you, in my early days, Florida State University, I was a graduate student over there in sociology, teaching at the same time, had a teaching assistantship, and then it ended up out at Tallahassee Community College teaching sociology for, I don't know, about 2-3 years. And I'm not exaggerating. I made it part of my role as an educator, and especially in sociology, to bring to these students cross-cultural perspectives. And if nothing else, sociology purports to be that study of societal behavior, right? And psychology being the study of individual behavior, right? So if we're looking at a societal level, the cultures that are providing these societies, large or small, primitive or modern, ancient or current, contemporary, you know, they all bring to bear the norms and the mores and the laws and all of that that is associated then as culture for that particular society or even a civilization. Okay, so all that should be very familiar to you. So I'm telling you about classes where I would bring to the students, and there was a couple of them that I really liked. One that was a documentary of the Kwakiutl Indians in, or natives, in South America. And this particular primitive tribe of people, known for their ability to survive in this environment in South America. Remarkable documentary it is. Okay, all of that to say, it wasn't only one time, but I'd usually have at least one student question as to whether they were in fact human. These people they see portrayed in this documentary, living out their lives in their villages and such, and surviving off of the offerings of the jungle. They ate a lot of bananas. I remember that. Kwakiutls, they do. And they were under threat. I mean, as a culture, they were being pushed out. But notice what I've said there. Here you have college kids genuinely, honestly saying there's no way. No, they're not human. Isn't that a remarkable assertion? But yet, how it is across human cultures over time, racism has not somehow been invented in the last 200 years of American history. Heaven's sakes. You ever heard of the Babylonians? How about the Assyrians? How about those cultures that, by definition, identified another culture or society or group of people as not only alien but subhuman? I mean, it's the despicable part of human history, in my humble opinion, in which we find ourselves making judgment based on the culture that we're viewing. Go back and read some of the early works of Margaret Mead as an anthropologist, and her ability to bring to bear the idea that in her studies, particularly of the Samoan cultures, this idea of cultural relativism, that within any given culture, it's self-justifying, right? So what is normative for a given culture may not be acceptable behavior in another. Well, we kind of take that for granted now. But, yeah, 100 years ago, even 50 years ago, the notion that all of us are created equal in the eyes of God, man, it rings so beautifully, doesn't it? It has such a nice sound to it. But getting down to the business at hand and deciding, okay, we are going to fashion ourselves, whether it's through marriage, education. These are all the social institutions you can easily identify with. Our system of economy, that is business. How about our system of our political system, structure? How is it that in education we find ourselves, or housing, violating the very claim that we hold to, that all are created equally, that under the law all are entitled to justice, all are entitled to fair treatment? Well, of course, we live in a time at this particular moment when once again we are wrestling with those issues, and no less so here with this radio show. But I will say my approach to that is to underscore what it is that we're fighting for, to talk about those men and women, and we've got them all waiting for you today, who themselves have committed to a life of service. And on this particular occasion, this particular show that aired back in September of 2018, you're going to hear them talk about their recollection of 9/11, okay, because of the date. We asked them each to talk about their own experiences. We also had Tim Linnefelt with us, and he particularly was talking about a new coach in town. Coach Willie Taggart was about to begin his season with us then. And I thought that seemed a bit appropriate now that we have another new coach about to take the field. And wouldn't we like to know what that was like back in 2018 when we were anticipating Coach Willie Taggart's arrival. So all of that today for you, courtesy of the kind folks here at Moose Magnificat. I think you're going to enjoy it, so stay with me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time again, my sports fans, for another edition of the Linnefelt Sports Report. I want to get your thoughts and just your observations, I guess, as to how everything felt from the end of that game going through the week. I mean, there had to be a deep sobering going on.
Yeah, that's probably a good word. You know what was unique about it, Brian, was that you really didn't have a lot of time to dwell on it because that game was played on a Monday and they played again on a Saturday. So, you play until late on Monday night, after midnight. You have a day to rest and recover on Tuesday. You practice Wednesday and Thursday, and then you turn around and there's another game right there. So I don't think the team really had a lot of time to feel sorry for itself or lick its wounds. I also don't think it had a ton of time to get adequately prepared for a Samford team that I think is probably a little bit better than most people would want to give them credit for, which I understand. It's been a weird, 10 days or so since, 12 days since that season opener. I think for the fan base, perceptions surrounding this season have probably shifted a little bit. But then also, I think that this game against Syracuse that's coming up in a little while here, it's really, I think, an important game, probably has more significance attached to it than we would have anticipated when the schedule was announced or even 2 weeks ago. Sure. Syracuse traditionally isn't one of the more powerful teams in the ACC. I think Florida State's won like 10 straight games against them, I think is what it is. But I think this game, to me, will be a pretty strong indicator because, Syracuse is – they're good enough to beat you if you don't play well. They have a senior quarterback, a four-year starter. You're playing up there. It's a noon game, which can kind of do weird things to teams on the road in terms of, energy and atmosphere and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm really intrigued to see what happens. And one more point I want to make before we ask your next question is that, football coaches across America, they love to say, and I think there's evidence to bear this out, that teams typically, they make their biggest jump, they make their most progress between week one and week two. And Florida State essentially played two games in week one. So my question is, will we see that kind of week one to week two jump today against Syracuse? Yeah. I think the optimistic outlook is that you will, and we'll see.
You said that if you don't play well, Syracuse can come up and beat you. And that was the sentiment among a lot of folks. The loss was painful enough, but more so the play, the way that Florida State was playing left a lot of people very, very unhappy.
Those are a little disjointed.
On both sides of the ball, and couldn't seem to find any resource or any place you looked, whether it was a quarterback who just seemed like he had lost that touch. He was
he wasn't scrambling like we were used to seeing last year. So we're still back where we were a few days ago when we played the Hokies.
Yeah, I thought the quarterback played pretty well, DeAndre Francois. I thought he was good against Virginia Tech, and even more so against Samford. And I thought the defense, I thought, played well against Virginia Tech. I don't think they were the problem, and then there were some issues certainly against Samford. By and large, they cleaned those up in the second half. I think kind of what you're touching on, I think the biggest issue is particularly on offense, just in terms of, you know, not getting into rhythm, not playing. Willie Taggart likes to use the term a clean game, meaning you know, no silly penalties, all that kind of stuff, and they haven't been able to avoid that yet. And I think, look, there's no offense in the country that can handle a lot of penalties and drops and all that kind of stuff, but this one in particular I think is really reliant on getting into a rhythm, getting, you know, letting one play build after the other, and setting the defense up, you know, play one to play five, that sort of thing. And when you're not able to get into that rhythm and get the defense on their heels, it can be a pretty uphill climb. I mean, this is an offense that's not built for second and long, third and long. You know, it has to sort of stay on schedule. And once you get that ball rolling, it's kind of like an avalanche. It just keeps on going.
Keeps moving.
But if you can't get it rolling, it's tough.
When you think of Jimbo Fisher's style and Taggart's style, do you have a characterization there? How do you compare them?
They're different for sure. You know, I would take exception to the idea that Jimbo was this tight-laced, you know, military general who had everybody, you know, up at the crack of dawn or what have you. I think a lot of the thought and the chatter about, you know, discipline and accountability and whatever else, I think those were things that needed to be renovated from the previous staff. Mm-hmm. I think most people would probably tell you that. And you know, you heard a lot of Willie Taggart talk this summer about, you know, changing the culture and establishing that accountability and that discipline.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't just always speak that into existence. You know what I mean? That has to come through experience.
One sports writer wrote the idea that Taggart inherited a team that was broken in half. You know, that there were parts of the, you know, two parts of the, and they just didn't hang out with each other. So he spent the summer trying to say we are one team here.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, it's never easier to do that than in June. You know what I'm saying? But when you get to the middle of the second quarter and you're down two touchdowns to Virginia Tech or whatever the case may be, you know, your first human nature is to go back to what you're used to. And so that, I think, is the challenge that he and this program I think are going to face. You know, today and then also for the rest of the season. I have no, and I don't think anybody reasonable, you know, long term, I think it's too early to say and too soon to use these two or three games as a referendum on the big picture. But I think, you know, it's it's going to take a while to build that foundation back.
Lastly, Taggart, he's definitely had to accommodate the fact that Florida State, while we love him, we think he's a great guy, we want to know if he's a great coach. So he's got that now in front of him. Have you noticed changes in his approach? Is he still as open-handed as he was when you first met him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's a pretty cool customer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And one of the things that you know, if you look at his resume, going into struggling programs and rebuilding that foundation and getting them cleaned up and in good shape has kind of been his MO. He did it at Western Kentucky, his alma mater. He did it at the University of South Florida, and he was only at the University of Oregon for a year, but they made positive strides in his 1 year there. And so, you know, in a sense, this kind of really isn't anything new for him. Now, what is new and what is different is the setting, the place. You know, with all due respect to all those places, including the University of Oregon, none of those have the spotlight and the pressure and the expectations of being at Florida State. So the idea is, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher now.
Right.
But I think the process overall is probably the same, and his track record suggests, by and large, that he can get it done.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate you being here. The Linnefelt Sports Report, courtesy of Seminoles.com. Our good friend Tim Linnefelt, always on the ball. You stay with me. We've got more coming up.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557. More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The mission of the Franklin County Sheriff's Office is to create a safer Franklin County by reducing crime, ensuring the safety of our citizens and visitors, with commitment to making our community a better place to live, work, and visit. That by way of Sheriff AJ Tony Smith. He's our guest this morning. Hello, sir.
Hey, brother. How are you doing?
Nice to see you again.
Great. Good to see you.
We were much younger when we first met.
Yeah.
And I know you were better looking. I think I've always been stuck with what I've got here. I don't think it changes much.
It's all relative, man. It's like, hey, what they say, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Indeed. Thank God.
Exactly.
So,
thank goodness.
It seems to me from your beginnings as sheriff, you've been trying to be a bit more transparent, more interactive, more engaged with the community.
Correct.
How's that going?
I think it's going well. We have a lot of people that come to our Facebook every day, probably hourly, looking to see what's going on, whether who's arrested, what kind of events are occurring, where we've been, what the deputies are doing. You know, we try to post a couple of things a day about what's going on. Like this morning, I stopped at a local business in East Point, and a young man, probably 6 years old, was with his dad there for work, and I gave him a little badge. You know, his dad brought him in, not to meet me, but to talk to the manager of the office, and he introduced him to me, said, here's the sheriff's son, and he shook my hand, young man shook my hand, and so then they went outside, and I got ready to, you know, did my business and talking to folks, and I was getting ready to get in the car, and I saw him, so I called him over, and I said, would your son like a small badge? I have these little badge pins, and he's like, oh, yeah, he'd love one, so.
There you go.
Put the pin on him, took a picture with him, and put it on Facebook, and, you know, and he said, you know, he really wants to be a deputy when he grows up.
Interesting.
And I'm like, you know, so such a cool interaction, but, and so we're able, we need a social media to share it with an unlimited amount of people. Hey, you know, is it a big thing? Well, who knows? Because to this child.
Sure enough.
He's like, well, I've got something from, I can remember the first time I got a badge that a law enforcement officer gave me a badge. I mean, it was like, I never forgot it. And so those things sometimes go a long way.
You don't know, and those multiple number of moments through the course of the day, through the weeks, through the years.
Right.
You build up then a kind of relationship, and this is something that I know local law enforcement here in Tallahassee has been trying to do, and a lot of law enforcement agencies around the country have been trying to be more plugged in and, if you can say this, put a little different face on law enforcement. Do you struggle as a department with the same kinds of issues that
I think
Leon County does, pretty much?
I think every agency has some like issues. Bigger cities may have more of them. We have fewer of them, but it's just like when I was elected. Let me back up. The tendency for a lot of agencies has been to go to the militaristic look, outer vest, cargo pants, you know, the BDUs, and
ready for battle.
Right, and I think that's, and you know, there may be some cops out there disagreeing, but I like the idea of the traditional green uniform. You look like a law enforcement officer instead of a, you know, a SWAT guy. We have our SWAT guys when we need them, and they're in the back. But we have a uniform that everybody can identify with. It's soft, but still, they have all the tools on their gun belt. They have their body armor. They have everything they need, but still it's a softer look and a more approachable look, and that's what I wanted to give the community as sheriff of Franklin County, an approachable, more comfortable, relaxed look
so
for
that
the deputies.
So I look at you and go, okay, he's here to help me, not
hurt me. Exactly, because I tell people that you know, 5% of our job is putting people in jail, and 95% is helping people, whether it's a flat tire, whether it's to go check on their elderly parents who live alone, or whatever it is. That's, you know, that's kind of, that's the way I see it.
Well, and in keeping with some of your mentality, you've brought this to our attention even in this moment. That has not been the PR side, we'll say, the front end of law enforcement hasn't really been the concern of a lot of agencies, I think, because we kind of all just felt like, yeah, they're doing their job.
Right.
But a lot of negative press has come in the last 5 years or better.
Right.
And so is that a response then from law enforcement to say, well, time out, wait a minute, or is it really more about, we have all these tools available to us? You mentioned social media.
Well, I think everything has its cycle, you know, whether it's clothes, you know.
Fashion trends.
Right. 30 years ago, there was a two-button suit. Then you went, you know, things changed, and there were three-button suits. Now they're back to two-button suits.
You know, it's a question of style.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying it's just everything is, I think, is cyclical. And, you know, whether it's the way law enforcement reacts, you know, years ago everybody wore the same uniform, and you know, now we have militaristic uniforms, we have, you know, the regular traditional, what I call, like what a lot of deputies wear, so things change. And
we're sitting here on the week in a retrospective, we look back at 9/11, that was this last Tuesday, and think about how that, as a cataclysmic event culturally, certainly it had all kinds of implications for law enforcement, but I think it turned the culture in a direction that said law enforcement, first responders, firefighters really are our heroes. They are the folks that run into a burning building when the chances of them getting out, in that case,
they're running in when everybody's running out.
We're zero to none. And how has that then turned, you think, the community that you serve in your direction to say, hey, well, wait a minute.
Well, you know, I think it's a couple of things. And one, I'm fortunate that I'm the sheriff in a fairly small county, and just about everybody
close
knows
net.
Everybody. Mm-hmm. So that has its advantages as compared to a city like, you know, county like Leon, where there's hundreds of thousands of people and everybody doesn't know everybody, and plus it's a huge melting pot here with the universities and, you know, all the different people that are coming here. So I think we kind of have an advantage because we know everybody, or the majority of people, and we're able to.
How did 9/11 change you?
Well, you know, I can remember the morning, and I've seen a lot of people talk about, you know, they'll never forget where they were, and I'm probably the same way as you are, but I was the chief of law enforcement for the Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco here in Tallahassee, and I was in my office and had a TV on the wall, because usually, you know, monitor the weather, news and stuff like that, and it was on a news channel, and saw the first plane hit, and I was like, I just kind of shook. I said, no, this can't be real. There's no way this is real, you know, and it actually just kind of, you're just kind of like, you just have no reaction almost. It's like, this can't be real. Then when you see the second plane and you find out that there are other planes and you see what's going on, it really made you think about what was happening in the country and where were we going.
The magnitude of it all.
And as you saw the day progress and all the destruction and all the death and what the people were dealing with in New York City, it was just like, it was very surreal. And I remember a lot of the staff in the office just crowded in my office, because I think it was, the director had a TV and I think I did. And so everybody was just like with their, you know, mouth wide open. Oh my gosh, you know, what is going
on? Astounding how it is that events of that nature, and I mean at that scale, that are unprecedented. You and I sat there along with the rest of the world going, I have never seen that before.
Right.
And your brain is trying to process.
It cannot compute what you're seeing.
Is this somehow a simulation? Am I seeing real life? It's when the Challenger blew up. You just stared at the screen and thought, that's impossible. That could not have happened. But it happened.
Right. And, you know, I remember a lot of things about that day. You know, President Bush was in Florida.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people knew that. And then, you know, they were going to him. And I think everybody was in total disbelief, total shock.
And hard to believe it's been 17 years. That's
one of the hardest things that I mean. that I think about is like, it has been 17 years and it feels like it was yesterday.
Just yesterday.
And I can only imagine how the people that have relatives that they lost or, you know, something like that, how they must feel, you know, because I'm sure that I saw the TSA put a video out yesterday. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was a quite compelling video.
I did see it.
Of a lot of the phone calls from the airplanes, people were making their loved ones and the air traffic controllers.
Remarkable.
And it's just like, wow, you know.
Yep, talking with Tony Smith here. He's the sheriff, a new sheriff in town over there in Franklin County. We're glad to have him with us this morning. You stay with me. I'm going to have some more conversation with this young man. I think we'll learn a lot. Be right back.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with Sheriff Smith, known to his friends as AJ, known to his closer friends as Tony, and trying to do the right thing over there for all the good people in Franklin County, which is, I mean, that's a mixed bag, too. You talked earlier about being rather close-knit, and the fact is you've got a lot of diversity even that way up and down the coastline, and that's, for you, I suppose, a kind of... how is that for you, I guess? When you think of the kinds of folks that you are serving and the variety of lifestyles, I mean, guys that are oystermen out there and people that are retailers and...
Well, you know,
it's a very diverse sort of environment.
And we're, you know, we've seen the economy change over the years. You know, seafood was king for a long, long time, and now it's not what it used to be, which, where I grew up in 2 Mile, which is 2 miles west of Apalachicola. People say, where's 2 Mile? Well, it's 2 miles from Apalachicola. And it was totally seafood. And all along the waterfront there, which is along the bay, there were oyster houses and shrimp boats. And, you know, and
for everyone that's open, there's two that have closed.
Well, there's only two open now. I mean, most of them have closed. And it's really sad to see it because it was such a thriving waterfront. And then even in downtown Apalachicola, same way, shrimp boats from the bridge all the way, you know, for a mile down the water.
And I know that's a complex issue. I mean, in terms of environmental issues, the impact of.
But so now we're tourist driven. We have thousands of tourists every year, which we're thankful for because it sustains our economy.
Yeah. Coming through. Yeah.
And most of those folks, they come there, they enjoy our beaches and our shops and stores and stuff like that.
A1
and restaurants.
Beaches, man.
Yeah. And then. Worldwide. And then they're gone, yeah. So, I mean, it's it's a good thing for us that we have that.
If you think back, and then, I started to ask you this question about Franklin County and the kinds of issues you deal with. We talked in the prior segment about the surreal aspects of the attack on the World Trade Center 17 years ago. Here you are in Franklin County, one of the most beautiful environments in the world.
True.
And you end up with a frickin' wildfire that destroys how many homes?
Over 30,
I mean, so there's your little mini World Trade Center catastrophe going on right in your front yard.
Yeah.
Tell us about that experience for you.
Well, again, typically when you have a catastrophic event, it happens very quickly. as we saw with 9/11, I mean, in a matter of minutes, it was over. I mean, before you could really even comprehend, it was over. Same way with the, you know, the fire we had in East Point. I mean, it was, I've compared it to some of the fires out west, how quickly they move, that you, they're moving so quickly you can't get out of the way. And that's what we saw that day. And the fire was moving so quickly that people were fleeing their homes with nothing but the clothes on their back because it was, you know, moving so quickly and so intense. And we called every deputy we had out to come and help us evacuate. I mean, it was just a, it was literally just a matter of minutes. It changed direction in just a 5 minutes and was heading in a totally different direction. You know, we were watching it 1 minute, the next minute we were evacuating people. So, it was probably one of the, well, we've had a couple of small storms since I've been sheriff. Of course, I have been through some hurricanes down there, but it was the most catastrophic event, one single event like that I've had.
I know you've had a tremendous outpouring from local community to try to help repopulate, help people out, getting back into their homes.
Well, you know, that
couple of churches that have actually purchased homes.
Yeah, I had two churches here in Good Shepherd and Reverend Holmes Church purchased, each one of them purchased a home.
Yeah.
And of course, had the local churches. Actually, Church of God in East Point stepped up as a staging area and a shelter for people the night of.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's just really, it's really kind of cool to see everybody come together, and even when there's no plan, for a lot of the other people that get involved and help. And that's the same way, I'm sure, in New York when it happened, that they had people from, I know people from all over the country went there to volunteer and help and do the things. And that's the great thing about the country we live in. That's why, even though with our problems, we're still the greatest country in the world. And, you know, we had, last year, you know, we had Irma, Hurricane Irma, and then we had the one in Texas. And we actually, I tell people this, that I felt, and I know that's what people felt for us, but I felt so touched and wanting to help the people in Texas when that hurricane went in there. Remember all the destruction they had there?
Horrible.
And I'm like, what can we do?
Yeah.
And so we reached out to our local community, and we wound up with 4 tractor trailer loads of goods and about $10,000 in cash. And we took it to, I didn't know a sheriff in Texas, and I just picked one on the coast that had been impacted. And
remarkable.
And we went there, and we took him all this stuff, and he was like, wow.
You know, it's astounding to me. Here's a little kid who you hand a plastic sheriff's badge, and you say, you know what? You're one of us. I'm one of I'm one of you. We all are together in this thing.
That's true.
That's got to feel pretty good.
No, that's, I mean, those interacting with the public, and just, that's the best part of the job. I mean, and doing things for, I mean, you know, locking somebody up is not fun. And but it's, you know, part of the business, and you got to do it when it's necessary. But I mean, the, you know, the best part of the job is coming together and doing, and having the authority and the wherewithal to, just like the, like we said, the sheriffs in the county we helped in Texas, and then right after that we went to Monroe County and helped the sheriff in Monroe County, took him goods. And I like to think that, because we did it not expecting anything in return, we just said, hey, we want to help. The people in Franklin County said, hey, let's help, let's all work together, and we did. And then, you know, 8 months later we have a huge disaster. And what happened? People from all over the country, somebody sent us like 10 microwaves. I don't even know who they were, from somewhere out west. I walked in the office, there's the boxes. I said, what is all this in the hall? They're like, somebody sent microwaves. So, I mean, people, the outpouring was tremendous, and stuff's still coming. And it's, and I'm sure, you know, that's probably, I think, the hardest thing. There's a lot of people, I see a lot of people that want to help. They just need somebody to show them the direction to go in. You know, a lot of people, there were people that called us all, hey, what can we do? Where do we need to go? And once you kind of get them directed, they're there, because there's
that's
so many
cool,
people
man.
That want to help. And it's really a good feeling to know that people are helping. That
it's a good feeling for me, and I think for all of us listening, that you're on the job and your folks are there, the entire bureau of the department, to point us in the right direction.
Well, you know that we're blessed with a lot of good men and women everywhere in this country that put on a uniform every morning, whether it's a firefighter, EMT, sheriff's deputy, police officer, military. I mean, these people serve. And that's what I tell the folks that work at the sheriff's office. If you don't want to serve other people, you're in the wrong job.
Yeah.
You need to find a new job. I don't have a problem telling them that. I tell my staff that quite frequently when somebody is not doing right. I'm like, look, yeah. if you don't want to serve, yeah. this is not the job to be in. Go yeah. go get a job somewhere else. Be
Take
a computer
off the
program.
Pants, get off the field, yeah. man. This yeah. is the NFL.
That's it. Understood. We're here to serve people, whether they're rich, poor, black, white. I mean, that's our job.
Folks, this is why we love this guy. AJ, Sheriff Tony Smith. He is Sheriff of Franklin County and a good friend of many, a friend of this show. Sheriff, thanks for being our guest this morning.
No, man, thank you. And again, thank you to all the folks in Tallahassee that came out to help us. I mean, City of Tallahassee sent their heavy equipment to clear sites where homes have been destroyed. I mean, just, you know, I can't say enough about our friends here and in other parts that really, really stepped up. So
very cool.
And I know this isn't about that, but I want to, you know, while I have the opportunity.
Give them a shout out.
No,
absolutely.
It is. It's amazing what, you know, Reverend Holmes and the folks at Good Shepherd and City of Tallahassee. And then a lot of just individuals that said, hey, you know what? You're our neighbor. We want to do something. They wrote checks. Mm-hmm. They did things. So it's
thanks,
great.
Sheriff.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Anytime.
Stay with me, folks. I got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We have a few announcements for you regarding local activities, and wanted to make sure I get to that, because you know what? I get talking at you and then I forget and it's not good. This is an announcement from the Office of Economic Vitality. To mitigate the spread of COVID-19 and protect the public health of our community, Leon County approved an emergency ordinance requiring face coverings, and that began this last Thursday, the 25th. As confirmed cases of COVID-19 continue to rise locally and statewide, the ordinance states that an individual in a business establishment in Leon County must wear a face mask while in that business establishment. I believe, too, there was some provisions made to the fact that facial coverings are not required for persons under the age of 6 or persons who have trouble breathing due to chronic pre-existing conditions. And so wearing a face mask would make that even more difficult. See, also, persons in their private rooms of a lodging establishment. So if you're staying at a hotel, you don't want to have to wear a mask. Unless you just like looking at yourself in the mirror and it looks kind of sporty. Restaurants and bar patrons that are eating or drinking. So that's understandable. Unless you're going to put a hole in your mask and suck it through a straw. Is that how that works, Carl? I don't know. Business owners, managers, and employees who are in an area of a business establishment that is not open to customers. So there's some logic there. Thoughts that this was part of the provision that if you are in a space where otherwise you cannot maintain 6 feet of distance, that's when this really comes into bear. But I'm not seeing a reference to that here in this note. We'll have to research that a little bit further. Just be advised that county has taken it up a notch. Let's see here. What else do we have? The county is going to provide you a mask if you don't have one. So, okay. So since they're mandating this, they're also trying to be fair-minded and giving you that opportunity if you haven't been able to secure a mask. A cousin of my wife's made me a mask. Doesn't fit very well because, you know, I'm the moose, and so I had to put little hair ties on my ear parts to get it to go around this head of mine. Ever tell you that, Carl? I wear a 7 5/8 hat. Ever buy me a hat? That is one big melon, buddy. Hard to find a 7 5/8. But anyway, Leon County will hold a special meeting of the grant scam targeting seniors. Okay, so this has to do with the targeting of seniors who are being victimized by people trying to take advantage of them. The Florida Attorney General's office receiving reports from seniors offered thousands of dollars in federal grant money to stay isolated at home to prevent COVID-19. Scammers are contacting seniors via Facebook, Messenger, email, and text message to offer these sham grants and request upfront payment as insurance for the expedited delivery of grant money. Okay, so this may apply to somebody in your family or a neighbor. A good rule of thumb, if somebody's asking for money, promising to give you money, right? Carl, am I right about that? You probably don't want to agree to that. Is that right? I think that's right. Here's the other thing, too. Apparently, there's a whole new wave of ransomware going off, and we've been victim of that here. Golly. Pretty much, if you're sending an email, you're okay. But if you get an email and it's promising you something, or it looks suspicious, especially if it's from an overnight delivery service, either FedEx or UPS, or the U.S. Mail, right? Yeah, be wary of those. Don't click on any of those links. Uh-uh. If you're not expecting a package from Seattle, and it says, we have a package for you. Click here to see your... Don't do it. Just mark it as spam. Delete it. Get away. Lemoyne, the fine folks at Lemoyne Arts, launching a Justice Through Art exhibit and their contribution to the exploration of social justice and injustice, taking part in this solution to improve understanding, acceptance, and appreciation of everyone in the community through the power of art. So it is. Lemoyne Arts has announced this particular exhibit. Submissions may include visual art, poetry, and essays. So this is open to you, my friend, if you'd like to submit your contribution, and it will be reviewed by their committee of folks. Lori Carlson, the executive director of Lemoyne Arts, is there to advise us. And let's see, submissions will be accepted from anyone in the community. A Lemoyne membership is not necessary to participate. And you got two different topics. Topic one is confronting and challenging racism. And the other topic is, how do you envision equal justice for all? Selection committee will begin their selection of art for age groups, children up to 12 and young adults 13 to 19, adults 20 to 35. So they've kind of broken it out into these age groups and then adults 36 and older. So you're going to want the details on all this, right? So go to lemoyne.org. That's the easiest thing to do. Lemoyne, lemoyne.org. And look for the upcoming Justice Through Art exhibit and how you can submit your contribution for consideration. And let me also submit to you consideration of various important information for you. The email address for our show, topics@tallahasseetalks.com. If you want to contribute to our welfare, submit an idea for a show, a guest that you'd like us to consider. We'll certainly do that. If you know of a musician that is aspiring, or maybe they've established themselves and they've got music they have written and produced, well, get that to us as well. Our good friends over at Coca are trying to coordinate some of this. You know, because Moose Magnificat Radio, the only radio station in Tallahassee, playing all original songs from local artists all the time. It's very cool. And what a collection we have across so many different styles and genres and such. Everything from jazz to reggae to blues to country and bluegrass and folk. I mean, it's all there. We got some rockers and some metal and rappers, and yeah, it's all good stuff. Moose Magnificat is the place to go. It's online at moosemagnificat.com. You can download the app at your leisure for your cell phone, and then you can listen anytime. You're just there. Or you can listen on TuneIn and, what else? TuneIn, Ocean, Radio Ocean is a good one. Alexa. Yeah, you can go to Alexa, and then Alexa will get you all squared away. So Moose Magnificat Radio is there for you all the time, because we believe in the good sound that is Tallahassee.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
So in keeping with our retrospective on the events surrounding 9/11/2001, we have invited several folks to join us. We have with us this morning Deputy Chief Tallahassee Fire Department, Richard Jones. How are you, sir?
Good, sir. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here.
Yes, sir.
We're going to just jump right in here with this. Where were you?
Well, it's a funny story, Brian. I was working in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I came to Tallahassee from. I was actually on duty at my fire station. I moved to Virginia from the northern New Jersey, New York area, so I was a buff, so to speak, and I was listening to FDNY on the computer when the first tower was struck. So it definitely is something I will never forget, you know, in my whole lifetime of where I was when it happened.
We've talked about this. The perspective you have and had then as a firefighter, different than the general public, do you think?
Yeah, I would say so, because, you know, of course, you and I, both being Americans and citizens, would think, okay, our country was under attack or a accident occurred. But on the other side, you know, other perspective is that, you know, I knew that my brothers in the fire service, the men and women that were running into those towers to save lives with no due regard for their safety or their lives, and worried about them and not knowing what was going to happen next, because there were so many unknowns, because one plane hit, a second plane hit the Pentagon, and you just didn't know what was going on.
When those kinds of moments happen for us collectively, do you see a rallying? Is there a kind of coming together that is notable for you?
Well, you know, you can see it locally in the Tallahassee-Leon community or across this country. When someone is affected, the rest of us, you know, don't say it's not our problem. We say, what can we do to help? What can we send? Or the number of people. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, in the Tallahassee area, if the Carolinas are gravely affected by this, we have USAR, urban search and rescue teams, right, that are at the ready to be deployed. And, you know, America is a country that you know, we may not live in a certain area or know those people, but we're going to jump in and help. And that's what we do. We are a resilient nation, Brian. And, you know, when we get knocked down, we brush ourselves off, we get up, or we help our neighbor get up and help those people move on. And that's what we do as a country. And I think the one thing that I think 9/11 did for our country is that it strengthened us in the fact of we could show you can knock us down. You bloodied our nose, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But you know what? We wiped ourselves off. We got up and we're resilient and we came back.
And as a department, TFD made changes, did they not?
Absolutely. It's changed the fire service in this country as a whole, Brian, where, you know, before the fire stations were left open 24 hours, you know, and now people are making attacks on fire stations or on police officers or EMS workers or, you know, those folks or dispatch agencies. So, yes, the heightened security has changed us and our awareness, so to speak. I know I've been in the fire service for 33 years, and it's definitely changed the fire service in this country as a whole. Yes, sir.
In what way? Your practices perhaps have changed. How has it affected you mentally, do you think? Are you looking over your shoulder a bit more, or maybe you're watching the other guy's back a little bit more?
I would say both of those things. Yeah. You're very, very attentive and keen to your surroundings, yeah. Your awareness, your situational awareness of who's there, who's around, what can happen. So, yeah, it definitely has made us be more vigilant on certain types of calls or all calls and really – you know, just making sure that we're keeping safe. And in the fire service, we like to use the expression, everyone goes home. And that's something that we really want to make sure that everyone goes home, not only the firefighters, but all the civilians as well.
Right, right. You have to imagine the unimaginable and then prepare for that inevitability as if it were likely to happen, right?
Well, yeah, you get the expression, Brian. I'm sure the listeners out there have heard you plan for the worst and hope for the best. So if you train for the worst possible scenario and that doesn't come, then you're more than ready and equipped and ready to handle it. And the training we do, you know, we've done more with hazmat and hazardous materials and dealing with, you know, if we had certain situations and you know, with explosive devices or anything like that. So it's changed the type of training we do where before it was just going in to put out residential fires, where we've kind of broadened our horizon, so to speak.
You watch the videos from those hours that passed on the morning of 9/11 in the faces of firefighters, law enforcement, EMTs. They're looking up at those buildings and you can see the disbelief and the frustration, because everything in them is saying, I got to help them, but there's nothing to be done. What can we do to put that fire out? And yet these guys are throwing, you know, air tanks on their backs and hiking up the stairs and everybody else trying to get out of the building. There's the unimaginable. Nobody could that morning thought these buildings are coming down. Nobody. And that in and of itself was that unimaginable circumstance. Now, I guess we don't make that assumption anymore.
No, we don't, Brian. And the two things I'd like to if from a personal standpoint to your listeners are, you know, number one, those men and women for, you know, FDNY, the police department, the Port Authority, EMS, they all went to work that day and didn't have any idea of the horrific events that were going to take place. And coming full circle with your theme of the show and talking to those guys and knowing a lot of people from up that way, the biggest thing that bothered them was that there was people they couldn't help, those people that were forced to jump to their death because they had no other choice. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there was people they just couldn't save, because as firefighters, you know, we're going to save everyone or die trying. That's what we do. That's where we are with our careers. And the fact that, you know, to look in these guys' eyes and see the hurt and you know, that they couldn't help some of these people, that was the biggest thing, the ones who did survive. And, of course, the brothers and sisters they did lose.
Sure. The ones who are much younger than you and I, who may not have been much more than toddlers, I mean, 17 years ago, what do you say to them? What do you do and what do you say to help them appreciate the magnitude of how that changed us? Or is that even possible?
I think it is. I think the phrase that is, you know, put with 9/11 is never forget. And I think to teach our young people that our country is vulnerable at any time. Anything can happen. Don't say it can't happen in Tallahassee or Leon County. terrorism can happen anywhere, anytime, and we need to remember these heroes and these folks that gave their lives to save thousands. Mm-hmm. There was thousands of people in both those towers that day, and the men and women of FDNY and the police department and the Port Authority and EMS, they got all those people out. Mm-hmm. It could have been so much worse than it was. Not mm-hmm. saying it wasn't horrific, because it was. It was the worst day in the history of the fire service, mm-hmm. but you know, it could have been a whole lot worse, but lives were saved, and you know, these firefighters made the ultimate sacrifice. Hmm.
He's in charge of planning and logistics for the Tallahassee Fire Department. Deputy Chief Richard Jones, our guest this morning. Thanks, Chief. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me, Brian, anytime.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In keeping with our observances this Saturday, we look back on the week. I have with me Lieutenant Tony Drzwicki, who is a 26-year member of Leon County Sheriff's Office. Lifelong Tallahassee native, graduate of Barry University, Miami Shores, Florida, and studied at TCC, Law Enforcement Applied Science. Guy's been on the job, uniform patrol assignments, including field training officer, promoted to sergeant, watch commander, field training program commander. So let's welcome Tony to our show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And thank you for having me today.
And by your permission, I'm going to refer to you by your first name.
Just call me Tony.
Because, you know, we just appreciate the fact that you, a part of that in this day and age that we live has to do with how law enforcement is perceived.
Absolutely. That, you know, I think that's the biggest bullet.
The new weaponry out there is how you show up in the nightly news kind of stuff.
It is the
24-hour news, for that matter.
Mentioning that, we train one way. And when you talk about training for officer safety, you almost want to intentionally leave out the perception part, because you don't want a deputy or a police officer to hesitate when action needs to be taken, because they're doing some sort of equation of, I know this is the right thing, but how is it going to look? Mm-hmm. And and in that hesitation, they become injured, or somebody else becomes injured. Mm-hmm. Then the reality is, afterwards, the perception of the event is the primary judging, mm-hmm. public judgment.
Mm-hmm. Of the personnel involved, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the personnel, the profession, the agency, and, then you rely on, state attorney, grand juries.
Right.
If I don't know the context of what it feels like to be aware that my contact with somebody could end badly every time, but I have to push that in the back of my head,
right?
It has to be there, but if I carry that in front of me, then I never...
It's paralyzing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I never do good.
Looking back, we mentioned 9/11, those who were on the job that day, especially firefighters, right, but law enforcement included, had never encountered anything of this nature. None of us had ever seen anything of this nature.
It is astonishing, because I will tell you, I remember exactly where I was at. I was 31 years old, and that day I was interviewing for a assignment with the hostage negotiation team. And I was
With
the Leon County Sheriff's Office. Yeah. It's a extra duty that you do on top of your primary duty.
Wow.
And myself and Sergeant Melinda McBride, we were both interviewing that day. Huh. And we were on the second floor of the sheriff's office. And back then, you know, we had one of those big TVs on a rolling stand.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the only TV on the floor. And we started hearing that there's something going on at the Twin Towers. And, of course, everybody, you know, starts gravitating towards the TV. And it's, you see the plane crashed into it. And we're looking at each other, and I can remember us even saying, you know, I wonder if some guidance system went out, and, you know, there was some
beacon.
Couldn't
have been intentional.
Right. Some beacon somewhere, and they're on autopilot, and this is some technology fluke or something like that.
Mm.
And, of course, then the second plane hit, and then, you know, we realized we were seeing something that we had never saw before. There's this theory called Black Swan. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but you know, what Black Swan is from a preparedness standpoint, take something you've never seen before, but you can imagine it, and say, how would you respond to this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially like in movies and things like that, you look at it and you say, you know, this is Hollywood at its best, right?
Sure.
Then you ask yourself, you know, is it plausible? You know, and then you say, well, you know, we haven't trained for anything like this. Mm-hmm. So it's called a black swan exercise. You take something that you would say, look, Tony, the chances of this happening are one in a million. But it's not really training for that event that is the purpose of the training.
Yeah, yeah.
It's saying, are we capable of responding to something that we've never seen before? And we want to prepare. But like you said, it was amazing. You know, these firefighters, think how quickly they had never imagined anything like this. Mm. The officers that ran into the building, you've got to wonder, did some of them think this is just a fire out of control?
Indeed. And their black swan was the building collapsing on them. So it's one thing to say, hey, there's a fire up there. Man,
right.
this is perilous. I've never seen this before. But then to say, and by the way, folks, this massive structure is going to be particles within the hour.
Think about it. I mean, the Twin Towers, the reason it was attacked was because it was a symbol of strength, right?
Yep.
So it's also a symbol of physical strength for us. It's taken, you know, this two planes in it, but now we need to get up there and, you know, get these people out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you think about it, again, the heroism, the bravery of they didn't know what they were going into.
And if we bring that home for your sake, you've been with the sheriff's office now for 30 plus years, is that right? 26 years. Well, you're a lot younger looking than I imagine. Bring it home. Are there the things in that, you know, quarter of a century that you have experienced this that the department has had to say, okay, never have seen that before, didn't see that coming, and then you've had to adjust. Now, for Sheriff Smith down there in Franklin County, it turned out to be an East Point fire that nobody could have imagined would have taken 30 homes in a very short period of time.
Right.
So for the county, I'm wondering for Leon County Sheriff's Office, what that is.
So, you know, post 9/11, we all had to open up our skill set books again. You know, we had to say, what is the job of law enforcement? We knew it had to change. And one of the interesting things that happened immediately after the media was covering in real time the rescue operations, we were getting calls from local media. What are you doing here? And at first it's, we ask ourselves, what do you mean, what are we doing here? This is, you know, this is up in New York. I mean, we don't have any information or anything like that.
Except for the fact the president's brother
sitting
over here.
You know, so then you think, and it's amazing that you said that. Well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush lives here, and he works in the tallest building in Leon County. And as the bird flies, guess what?
Yeah.
It's 3 miles from the airport.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Now, surrounding that with police officers, is that going to stop, you know, the threat that we were seeing?
Sure.
You know, putting a helicopter up there, you know, in that case, it was, you know what, let's start moving non-essential people out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the sheriff's office in the beginning, again, we weren't sure what to do.
I still remember seeing Air Force circling the Capitol for some period of time.
Absolutely.
Following me, just on patrol, saying, not on our watch kind of attitude. Folks, I've got Lieutenant Tony Driswicki. He's kindly agreed to be a part of this retrospective on 9/11 and the good folks there at Leon County Sheriff's Department. You stay with me. We've got more right after this.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Lieutenant Tony Driswicki, who, kindly enough, has brought us up to date on some things with Leon County Sheriff's Office. And Tony, we were talking about the manner in which these cataclysmic events come our way. In our time, you and I sitting here today, we're having to rethink what it means to be a patriot.
You know, and I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm curious, you know, because I asked myself this. Is there a difference between patriotism and nationalism for you, you know? And I think it's because I asked this question because it seems like Europe seems to be struggling with this issue right now of, you know, this nationalism where once, you know, open borders come, you know, and bring your families, but assimilate, right? And, you know, you mentioned your dad was from...
He was from Sweden.
From Sweden. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Swiss, the Norwegians, Scandinavians, you know, they're dealing with these issues right now of nationalism versus, you know, patriotism. And, you know, I see patriotism as exactly, you know, respecting the symbols of our country because those symbols... You know, they represent our forefathers who fought, who died, or who just went out west and built, you know, this country.
Sure.
And so for me, I'm torn because I feel it's my patriotic duty to stand up and say I'm an American, and that these symbols represent my country. And,
right.
But then when I turn to my neighbor or a member of, you know, my community, and they say, unfortunately, less respectfully these days, but, you know, they say, well, Tony, they were fighting for my right to not salute the flag and not stand up for it or to take a knee, and I'm going to exercise that right. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
I find that discussion in any 24-hour cycle to be the most provocative for me. It is the most, academically, it's the most curious for me, because I think that our country has never been anything but deeply divided over all kinds of issues. And if we want to pick on probably the most seminal, it would be racism and slavery.
Absolutely.
Which from our foundation was in fact preserved because Thomas Jefferson was told, we're not signing this thing, Southern states saying, we're not doing this if you don't remove that from the Declaration of Independence. So we carried that level of divisiveness within our being going forward and said, okay, we will survive in spite of it.
And on top of it, so they use, you know, Thomas Jefferson uses a legal term, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when he says we're all created equal,
mm-hmm.
all doesn't mean every human, right? What you know, they make a legal definition,
right?
Purposefully that, you know, that blacks would not. We're not talking about blacks in this document,
right? Because they're not human.
Well,
and I mean, honestly,
them,
the
to
belief,
them, their property.
Right.
Right. But when you read it, it seems so enlightened, right?
Yeah.
But then you have to see the context behind it, and it is an enlightened document. But, but then it causes us.
I think to your question about nationalism, patriotism. For me, patriotism is recognizing e pluribus unum, that we are united in the midst of all of this plurality. And in fact, that is the way we like it. We are not particularly comfortable with equating unity with uniformity. So nationalism for me is a sort of subset of that, or maybe even entirely different than that, when it comes to what it is that you're willing to fight for. You know, I'm willing to fight for your right to disagree with me. To me, that's a patriot idea that is embedded in our national identity, right? So nationalism is, I'm going to fight to defend what I believe.
Right.
And maybe that, in some way, is the difference. I just think that the only difference now in our discourse, because it's always been as uncivil, is just now we all have a microphone, and it's called the internet.
Well, and you know what? Going back to 9/11 and social media, remember, there was no Facebook, there was no, you know, social media presence, and you know, even with you know, the terrorists that carried it out, their propaganda was limited by back then conventional communication.
Right,
they weren't. Their message was filtered through third parties, media outlets, and things like that.
Yeah.
To where, you know, you fast forward today, they can take a smaller event, you know, a smaller deadly event with loss of life, but then they are able to maximize that propaganda, and they can remind the world whenever they want that, you know, chlorine gas was used in Syria, and we're responsible for this. And, you know, or we say the other side's responsible for this, and So think, you know, 17 years difference.
Sure enough.
So imagine if in 9/11, if the propaganda machine had been in place.
To the degree that it is now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the damage to our psyche was, well, we're still healing from it. You know, I don't really ever think, I don't think if you have any conscious memory of it that you'll actually, you know, heal in certain ways. But if you were to take, you know, the social media that we have today and put it back in there, then it turns into this whole other thing.
He is Lieutenant Tony Drzewicki with Leon County Sheriff's Office, our guest this morning. Learning a lot as we go through the 2 hours of this here fine radio show about what 9/11 means to each of us as we reflect upon 17 years ago this week when the Twin Towers were attacked. We find ourselves in this time, as you say, Tony, from a distance, still trying to recover, still trying to rethink how that affects us going forward. Thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's what I have for you today, my friend. Glad you had a chance to be a part of it. We'll be looking for you again next week. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat right here in Tallahassee. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. I'll be looking for you, so come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.